This episode is sponsored by ASICS and the brand new Gel Kayano 31.
So 31st iteration of a legendary shoe, a legend, much like me, because back in 1999, I was running in the Gel Kayano 5.
Yeah, I wasn't because I was a year old. But if they'd made my size, I probably would have been.
So the shoe's been around for ages as ASICS' traditional go-to stability shoe, so giving you the support that you need on your runs, but was fundamentally redesigned for the 30th version. We're now on the 31st version here, to be a shoe for everyone, even if you haven't traditionally thought you needed a stability shoe, because the way that technology works with the combination of foams in the midsole is that it gives you the stability when you need it. So when you get fatigued towards the end of the run and your running form starts to suffer, for example.
There's definitely video evidence of me doing this, and this is where the shoe comes in. The technology kicks in when you need it so that you're not kind of rolling in or out and keeping nice and neutral.
Exactly. So it looks after your feet. Also, from a durability perspective, we've been told by ASICS that you can expect comfortably 600 to 700 miles, but actually that in testing, runners have seen double that.
Yeah, a great everyday shoe. If you want to go check out the Gel Kayano 31, head to the link in the show notes. This episode is sponsored by us. We've hijacked it again.
Yes, we love doing this. We've teased this for a couple of months. Unbearably, we've had a few emails about it, but we can now tell you all about it. We've teamed up with Sports Tours International to give you the chance to come and run with us at the Malaga Marathon and Half Marathon on the 15th of December this
year.
Yes,
last year you ran your first ever marathon, and only a few of us got to witness the pain of that in real life. But this year, you can come and run the marathon, the half, and we're going to try and get Rick signed up to the half marathon too.
That's going to be the hardest job here. There are limited spots, but we have sorted it out with Sports Tours International, so they'll handle all of the tricky bits, the logistics and the bookings and so on, and you get 3 nights in a 4-star hotel, which is really exciting. But they'll look after you. They're the experts at doing this, which is why we've teamed up with them. So basically, if you'd like to come and get a little bit of winter sun, training for a marathon that time of year, I really liked, and this is very close to Valencia, so I'm essentially guaranteeing the weather.
Yeah, I'm not sure we can quite do that, but if you want a shakeout run, an excellent race, an after party and a live podcast recording, then grab your spot now. Head to the link in the show notes to find out more, or go to trc.social/Malaga.
This is the Running Channel podcast with me, Andy Badley, my co-host over here, Sarah Hartley. And because today we're going to be talking about how you measure success in running, how we measure success in this podcast is if we can get through the whole thing without Rick talking absolute nonsense about science that he doesn't really understand.
Or talking at all, really.
I mean, that is a really harsh way to begin.
There you go. You've hit your quota. On with the podcast.
Let's go.
Oh, we're only kidding. We love you really, Rick.
Really? I mean, sometimes I just feel very underappreciated.
Oh, well, we've given him a special...
You've got a lovely little hat on, though. Should we talk about that?
Oh, yeah. Well,
For our audio listeners, Rick is sporting a very fetching hat. It's black, it says a Running Channel on the side, and it says Run Improve Repeat on the front.
And you may we've got coming up.
Be able to get your hands on it very, very soon.
We keep teasing stuff like merch. It is coming, I promise.
It takes quite a long time, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
It'll be here by Christmas this year.
Next year.
It's coming. So today we are going to talk about something that's people have asked us about, actually, is how do you measure success in running? So what success means to each of us, what success might mean to people out there. But first, obviously, we should have a little catch up and talk about your running.
Can I start?
Oh, okay. You can go.
I've started training again.
Nice.
Really?
Woohoo! Big half is in 9 weeks.
When's that? Early September?
Yeah, second of September.
I'm doing a half in September.
Sorry,
it's didn't realise it was only it. 9 weeks away. That's a bit scary.
Only 9 weeks away. Very scary. But I started training, and this time I'm focusing more on like gym work, rehabbing, that kind of stuff, and it's going quite well. I'm enjoying it.
Yeah. So I actually saw you did a long run in inverted commas.
Yeah.
Wait, whoa. How long?
Whoa.
No, but relative to the fact that a few months ago you did a long run for your marathon.
Yeah, it was 42K.
35K or whatever.
Yeah, it's what I find absolutely incredible is that like I did the marathon, then obviously did Endure 24, which is slightly different, but that was still kind of 84K over a weekend. Yeah. This weekend I did 12K. And that actually felt quite long. I was over an
12K.
Hour.
Long yeah, my point time. About long run inverted commas is that long run's different for everybody. So depending
that's
on your training
why
for 10K,
I love the start of a training block, because you get to take it right back down and then you build up. Whereas I just feel like I personally just couldn't hammer 16-kilometer long runs all year.
Well, yeah, and my last year before I started my marathon block, my long run was 8K. Then this year I'm going to start my marathon block later this year.
Sorry, I'm trying to get a comment up.
Right. Oh, sorry. Well, see, a little awkward. A little awkward. Sorry. that what's amazing there is that Rick tried to play something on his phone and accidentally played it on the speaker, and I can see how cross he is, because there's nothing.
You know, you're clicking the wrong side. Like, that's the. No, look, oh, look how annoyed he is.
Because I think it physically upsets Rick to hear anyone play anything on the speaker.
It does make me uncomfortable. We were once in an airport when that happened, do you remember?
Yes, I do.
Was it you?
I think I tried to play you something that was like a 10-second clip on my phone in the airport, which was quite noisy, and I didn't think it was particularly obnoxious.
I just can't stand people using speakerphones in public. I really struggle with it.
Yeah. Well, there we go.
Anyway.
How's your running been, Andy?
It's been pretty good. So, yeah, I think before we were rudely interrupted by Rick's little speaker there, I was going to say that I'm probably going to start my marathon block instead of being 8K being my long run, like 20K has been a fairly regular long run for me this year.
Nice.
So that does feel like a massively different place to be in. But my running's been going pretty well. I'd had a little niggle. I slightly tore my hamstring at this 5K a few weeks ago, but I feel like I'm back in the game. I did 10K nice and easy over the weekend. But more important than actually how my running itself's going is that the comments on some of my activities are amazing. So people are back in the game.
Still, I love it.
You might remember that for my 5K, I uploaded three different activities, my warm-up, my race, and then what I labelled my warm-down, which you jumped into my comments to correct me and say that it should in fact be cool-down.
Yeah, correct.
So Dan Van Vornberg comments to say, to come back to the warming / cooling down discussion, I just watched the video from a couple of years ago where Sarah trains like an Olympian for a week.
Oh, no.
You instruct her to warm down and she doesn't bat an eye. Has she changed her mind since then? Or did she not dare speak up at that point?
Correct. The second one.
No.
I was so afraid. He was overpowering,
I was tyrannical,
guys.
Right?
Yeah. I don't like to use the word dictator. But that week, let's think about it this way. That week was probably to this day the hardest week of training I've ever done. I feel like that period there was a lot of stuff that I ended up doing that just made me hate you a little bit more. You paced me to a 5K PB. Yeah. That was terrible. Then I had to train like you for a week.
Yeah.
That was awful. That was the first time I did 100K in a week.
You did also, though, I remember you saying at the time how you begrudgingly had some tiny modicum of respect for me after that week. Because you were like, oh, this was quite hard.
No, that just must have been the tiredness delusion kicking in. Okay, fine. Or if I did, it's gone.
Yes. My running's going okay. And I'm always here for the comments on my activities because they do make me laugh. I've started labelling them. I called my recent activities something like minimal field viewing.
Oh, I saw that.
Yeah, that was just me. People love it though.
Yeah, pretty good.
I did have minimal field viewing, but decent lake viewing. So.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Love a bit of wildlife.
Rick, you've been running?
So,
while Sarah and I have been chatting off camera, Rick's just been organizing.
You know what it's like? It's, you know, when you're at like that family friend or like that person that you know where you have to like begrudgingly go over with your parents and like you want to leave and then they start and then you're like, okay, I think the conversation's dying down now. And then you go like, right, well, I think we better, you're that person who like we've gone to visit and you're like, oh, I forgot to say. And
you're
like,
just as you're leaving.
Oh, settling. Yeah. No, I was actually just going to talk about, you know, you've started your training block for the big half in September.
Yeah.
I've got the 15th of December on my mind, right. Malaga. Mm-hmm. And I debuted this thought in my head last week. And that is the concept of getting 21 kilometers around a course in Malaga compared to where I am now. And how I bridge that gap. Because I went out, did a decent kind of 9K last week, you know, running about 5:20, 5:30 kind of pace.
Yeah, that was decent.
It was warm. I was consistent. Like my figures, I was ticking them off. But then I got to, you know, 9. And I was like, well, the gap, that 12-kilometer gap seems enormous for me.
Yeah.
And I'm not nervous about it. But I generally don't know if I can do it.
That's a really important, poignant moment, but I just can't let you get away with, I debuted the thought in my head.
Yeah.
That sentence is so ridiculous.
Debuted.
And I could see Sarah almost shudder as you said it.
Also, can we just talk about, guys, don't worry, I finally followed Rick on Strava.
You did.
And I think it's actually hands down my favourite interaction of all time because I commented on like one of your recent activities being like, great work, mate. And you just went, hi, nice to meet you. So pop over to Rick and mine Strava if you want some equally great banter.
But you're saying it feels a bit scary to step up.
Like no, I'm not scared. I'm not fearful of it. I'm entering the unknown. Yeah. I was generally thinking about what the emotion is. Because I'm not scared of going on the start line.
Have you debuted that emotion in your head?
I haven't debuted that yet.
Right. I look forward to that one. Yet.
But it's the gap. I'm entering the unknown. How I go to that extra 12 kilometers.
When was the last time you ran a half marathon?
Oh, pre-osteotomy.
Well, obviously.
So, 2019?
Even pre-operation, you weren't like regularly running half marathons, were you?
No.
You did your marathon... Well, a fair few years ago now, and that not you know, we're not talking decades ago, certainly way before the operation.
Yeah,
and then post marathon, from speaking to you, I think you were running quite a bit.
Yeah,
but you were probably running 5-10k fairly regularly.
That's right.
So again, it's like it's been a long time.
So it's the
you need the 10% rule. So like I know you can't necessarily do like a conventional training plan because of your knee and like balancing S&C and stuff, but like use the 10% rule of building 10% onto the mileage that you're currently doing each week, whether that's just like take that 9k, add 10% on, which would be
900 meters, yeah. So 9.9k.
9.9. Yeah. Then the following week,
that's actually
added 990 meters. So
I'm going to say this
1,890 meters.
Great.
Potentially some of the best advice that you two have ever given me,
I think. No,
yeah,
I'm just doing
good.
The math,
which is rare.
So just keep, so we'll come back next week and I want you to do 9.9 and then we'll see how you feel.
So, okay, well, that's interesting.
But
so,
then that's
so I get to 9.9 and stop.
Yeah.
Not go to 10.
I mean, I'm sure you could round up slightly.
But that would create some great drama on Strava.
Yeah.
Maybe. Okay.
Yeah, people do love to get cross at
the I go to Strava every single run, but I just do kind of when I remember. I think. What? I don't Strava
everywhere.
How do
you not Strava everything?
I don't, to be honest with you, I don't
really
understand
how it works.
I'm ready
to record it.
There we go. He's got no idea what's happening. That's the main thing.
Some seem to record and some don't. Not quite sure why.
Right.
There you go. Okay, but anyway, but thank you for that. So I'll do the 10% rule and I'll build it up. Still seems a big gap.
But if
December the 15th coming at you.
If you bridge that gap, that'll be a huge success. Which brings us on nicely.
Very nice.
To how do we measure success in running?
Nice.
That was a good segue, wasn't it?
Very, very good.
Thank you. So I guess the first thing to talk about is like how do we each measure success? Because I feel like it might be a little bit different. Andy?
I'm very guilty of constantly moving my own goalposts, which makes it really difficult to measure success. And speaking to other people, I think that this is fairly common. So it's, you get fitter during a training block and then you think, oh, maybe I should stretch my goals a little bit more. And you sort of, you push them further into the distance. So in your half marathon case, Rick, if I was in that position, what might end up happening is that right now you just focus on 10% a week or 10% every few weeks because you've got plenty of time until December.
Yeah.
But then you might get really close. You might get to the fact where you're regularly, or you've done a few weeks of like 18, 19K, and you're like, oh, I'm definitely going to finish this half marathon. And then you're like, well, maybe I'll try and run under this time. So that's what happens to me is I set off with a target time often for like, okay, and like last year in the marathon is what happened. So at the beginning of the year, very much success was, could I get around a marathon just privately on my own? Then that very quickly snowboarded into like, let's film this whole thing and follow the journey and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
Which was good because it kept me honest. But it then meant that I really applied myself to training like I had done previously. And because of the level I was coming from, I saw really fast improvement. And so these times I had in my head, 3 hours was the big thing I was talking about. Actually, I started thinking to myself, I think I could probably run 2:50. And so then what ended up happening on the day is I ran 2:53. And so had I just stuck with my original goals, I'd been absolutely buzzing because I smashed it by 7 minutes. But actually what had happened, that drift psychologically had meant that I was slightly like, oh, I thought I could run 2:50. You know, in hindsight, I'm speaking to lots of other marathoners since then, I hadn't really done enough training to justify that. And for me, the pace is always straightforward.
Yeah.
But hanging on to it for 3 hours is not, and my body wouldn't really stay together. So I guess I almost need to take a lesson from myself and not move my own goalposts. Be like, have aims where, oh, actually I've got fitter than I thought I could. Let's see if I can do that thing. But I should still be like buzzing and really happy for having achieved the goal that 10 weeks ago I didn't even think was possible.
Rick, how do you measure success?
No, it's definitely changed for me nowadays, kind of post-injury compared to, you know, pre-injury. I think I used to measure success purely on times and how, and you know, a bit like Andy was talking about, but for me it was very set. It's like I would be running under 5 minutes a kilometer. That would probably be my success. So yeah. So if I run over that in a race, 5K, 10K, I'd be like, well, that's a failure for me. But now my success is incremental, small gains and pain-free training. No doubt for me. It's so simple, actually. And when you think about actually what success is, or what it's kind of being healthy, isn't it? Like a lot of us run for health reasons. And I definitely think now, if I get to the end of a 9 or 10K and I'm not in any major pain, for me, that's a successful run.
Yeah.
I think as well, like even like the longevity aspect of it is really important as well, because running has become like such a kind of massive popular thing and like a massive popular kind of cultural thing in 2024 as well. There are run clubs all over London, all over the world, like they're popping up. One of my news stories is about this as well.
Yeah.
But it's also thinking about it in the case of like, yes, you could go and hammer 10 races and an ultra marathon and like all of this stuff, but then are you then going to be able to do it next year? Or like how long do you want to keep it going? Because like for me, running is something that I want to like be in my life for the rest of my life. So I'm very aware that if I don't train sensibly or I don't keep up the S&C, that's probably not going to be the case, because it's somewhere down the line, I'm going to push it too hard and then not going to be able to recover from it.
Yeah, that's interesting, because I was thinking about that. I almost end up being the opposite. Probably to my own detriment, where everything in that moment is what's important to me. So if it's the
all in
the 5K the other week, actually I had this little grab in my hamstring. And if I'd had that same grab in my hamstring in training or in a race preparing for that 5K, I'd have stopped. 100% I would have just stopped and then gone and seen a physio and stuff. But I was like,
I'm in the race.
Yeah, and I didn't at any point have, because that was my goal, that race. I was like, oh, if this wipes me out for another 6 weeks or 8 weeks injury-wise, then I'll take that hit. And I probably had the same in my marathon last year, where everything building up to it, I'd have been super careful. But then on the day, a bit like, it probably goes back to the Olympics. Like you train for 4 years for this one thing. I would have run on a broken foot. I ran a world championship semi-final when I was on crutches in between my heats and semi-final.
Did it hurt?
Oh yeah, it was horrific. I had an injection in my foot.
I was going to say, did you have an injection? Yeah.
But I couldn't really.
But that probably
Wait,
just
and
makes
what had
it
you
worse.
Done to your foot?
Well, loads of footballers have that before they play on a Saturday.
Yeah, it was. I'd run the heats on whatever day it was, and then I had 48 hours recovery, in inverted commas, but I couldn't even cool down or warm down after the heat, because I literally, the moment I took my running spikes off, I had this shooting pain in the center of my foot, and I was pretty certain I'd broken my foot. We did actually get a scan and they said I hadn't broken it.
Really?
But
a metatarsal, was it?
Well, it wasn't broken, so there was no evidence of anything. It was just excruciating pain. So I hobbled around on crutches a few days. They gave me an injection
numb
it. And then I ran. I didn't run that well in the semi-final, obviously. But at that point I was like, well, this is everything. This is the whole year for me.
See, I don't quite want to get to that level.
No,
running through pain. In hindsight, it's not very healthy, is it?
That's a very individual basis. Like, we're all talking individually about, you know, how we measure our running success. But I mean, I'd be interested to hear from you two. Do you think, because I don't run really in a run club as much as you two do it a lot more than I do. Do you think the answer to this question that we're posing today, how you measure success, is actually now more communal because of run clubs? So actually, I have a successful run, for a lot of people might say, because I get to meet up in a group, go out, socialize. Whereas you went back 5 years ago, you know, run clubs have been around for donkey's years, but they've clearly changed in the last couple of years. You know, they're so more social, they're louder.
There's
more music, you know, and there's a lot of debate, isn't there, about whether that's a good or a bad thing. Personally, I think it's any form of club is a good thing.
I think it's the accountability thing, because like there are like a few people who I know who are trying to get into running, and it's the getting out the door thing that is so hard, and that's where a run club can be so beneficial, because if your measure of success, like it's a niche within running to do a training plan and complete a race and go for a PB. Like there are other people who are a vast majority as well, and their aim is to be able to like go out for a run a few times a week consistently. And that's the big thing. And I think that's where a run club can massively come in
but
and help.
That's also probably, if you are measuring your success by a time, you're going to run faster. It's like when I run with you, Sarah, you push me to run faster because, you know, you talk a lot at me.
And you're like, God, I just want this to end.
Yeah.
I think that last year, actually, and this is the really hard thing. So this is the thing that I'd like people to take away almost, is that everyone's their own worst critic, I think. And you only remember, or they psychologically in everything that you do, you remember the bad things, even if they're, you know, 1% of all of the good stuff that you've done.
Yeah.
You fixate on that bad run that you had, that you didn't maybe hit your A goal in terms of the time. You're like really critical of that. And it's quite hard to step back and be really rational. And actually, if I was to listen back to podcasts that we were doing in January, February 2023, then I was hardly running at all. And the reason for doing the marathon almost was to like see if I could build up to running three times a week and then see if I could physically complete the distance.
Yeah, but now, if I was like, oh, you're going to run twice a week now for 5 weeks, you'd be like, what? No, I love running.
Yes, exactly. So that's my success. My success of 2023 was that I got to that point of regularly running pain-free. So a thing back to Rick's health point, but I achieved my goal and sort of, you know, first thing, don't shift the goalposts so far that you don't get to celebrate those wins. I should have been celebrating the end of the year. Wow. I run the marathon and felt incredibly proud of that. But then I was already thinking, oh, in that marathon, like these things didn't go quite as well as I'd like. Like next time I do it, I'm going to change these things.
Yeah.
But I think that's the fun thing to unpick as well. Like you can't, it's almost impossible to go into a training block and be like, I'm going to do this, 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 and this, and to tick all of them off. But then it is quite nice to have those goals that aren't just centered around time. Like for this half marathon, I have kind of two very clear goals. And for London, actually, I had two clear goals. One was a time and one was to have the best day ever. I gave myself such a hard time within that race, but that was because I was kind of in this fighting battle of I was trying to have fun and trying to push myself really hard. So now for this half marathon, my goals are one, can I get a PB? And I'm not thinking about time. I'm going to have a really strict pacing strategy on the day, but I'm just not thinking of it.
But you've got to be thinking about time if you're going for a PB.
Yeah, so I am going to, but I'm not setting an like unachievable time goal. I'm going to train, see where I'm at, and then choose a time goal. And then my second one is, can I race without getting scared? Because I don't have the, if I was on crutches, I'd be like, sick, that's my ticket out of here, I'm not doing it.
Yeah.
Like I get that fear of even watching, so it was the Olympic qualifying British champs at the weekend.
Yeah.
Watching people, like I have never been in that situation apart from a sports day of like lining up and then a gun going off and having to go. Yeah. Even watching it on TV made me feel a little bit uncomfortable of like, oh, I just couldn't deal with that pressure. And that's what I want to learn to be able to do.
A little bit of what scares you is good for you. You know, even a little bit of, it's not even being scared, it's a little bit of nerves is good for you.
Yeah, but
I
on
like
a
coming
scale
and
of...
doing a broadcast, you know, most days of the week because I get a little tingly feeling before I broadcast.
I just think you need to put your clothes back on before
you start this broadcast.
I just think on a scale of like little bit of nerves to like full on phobia, I'm just getting a bit too close to the phobia
end
of the spectrum.
Just aim for under 2:05.
Yeah, you under five pass.
Under five past.
Go for under five past two.
Do you think that fear has been exacerbated because it's always documented on the Running Channel?
No, because I would...
Or was it there before?
No, I feel like it's there before. Mm. I think I don't know. I just have... I can't do it. It's very scary.
But then a measure of success, and I think maybe we should touch on it regularly, is like, how can you, maybe just a few minutes of every podcast episode, like what have you done to deal with the mental side of it? Like this is, you know, I got the luxury of working with a sports psychologist for 4+ years during my career. And every week we'd have a check-in and she'd almost be like testing me on my homework and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
We'd use elements of CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, which is a fairly standard kind of sports psychology, but also sort of general counseling technique. But I reckon we could see.
All right. Well, my homework.
Because that could be your measure of success, right? Is if you've dealt with the big half by being able to be on that spectrum of like terrified to not feeling anything. Because I think if you don't feel anything when you're going into an event, like you don't care, you're completely ambivalent, like that is hard to perform at your best.
Yeah.
So you need Like, I think it's, what is it, inverted U theory. So you need increasing levels of anxiety to perform better. But then when that levels of anxiety goes past the peak, you start to detract from your own performance. Yeah. So we need to find where's that sweet spot.
Well, this week I'm going back to intervals for the first time. So that scares me, but I'm going to try and tackle it and not be afraid of the paces, and I will report back.
Awesome.
Nice.
Well, you're listening to the Running Channel podcast. Up next, we've got the news, lots of news to talk about this week, followed by our favourite bit, your questions.
Don't forget, this episode is brought to you by the brand new ASICS Gel Kayano 31. And through the 31 iterations, they've been focused on what they would call a Kaizen style improvement. So in Japan, that refers to continuous small improvements to make big differences. So in this case, there's an improved upper. There's also brand new grip on the outsole. And the way that the collar around your ankle has been constructed is totally different. So they've evolved what was already a step change for the Kayano franchise last year with the 30, massively with the 31.
Yeah, personally, a thing that I love is the pull tab, because do you have like one finger on my hand is slightly bigger than the other from just pulling on shoes. So if you have a pull tab, it really helps.
Wow, I've never looked at your fingers closely enough to assess their
relative
strengths.
Hey, it's a
real
problem that I'm sure a lot of people experience. So having little features like that really does make a difference.
I don't think it is. But if you want a shoe that could give you that little bit extra stability, could look after you on your runs, and you could use them for all of your different runs, then check out the ASICS Gel Kayano 31 at the link in the show notes. Don't forget, you can come and run with us at the Malaga Half Marathon and Marathon in December this year. We'd love to have you come and join us.
Oh, it's going to be so good. And there are so many of us coming out there. So you might be able to run alongside us as well. I don't know what I'm doing there yet. Do you want a pacing? Let me know.
Yeah, if you want Sarah to pace you to a half or a full marathon, or if you want Rick to get involved.
No. Sarah will not be pacing you to a full marathon. Sarah will be pacing you to a half marathon.
Sign up now and we can make this happen. This is what we need. But you get to have lots of fun with us. 3 nights in Malaga, all sorted out by Sports Tours International. If you want to join us, places are limited. So as quick as you can, head to the link in the show notes or to trc.social/Malaga. The website has all of the details of the costs involved, so you can take a look at the different options. Flights aren't included, but this isn't a money-making exercise for the Running Channel. It's a chance to take everyone out to Spain for an amazing experience. And the cost is what it costs for the hotel and for Sports Tours to organise it all.
Yeah, before we do a bit of news, I've got a little heart shape on my t-shirt.
Of sweat.
Just like
sweat.
Just like a Care Bear from the
90s. It's kind of like a smiley face as well.
That's called a double nursery drop. And then and then run for a
podcast. What, you mean you've actually had to do parenting today?
Yeah, the first time in 2024. No. And it's broken out in sweat. It looks a little bit like, what are they called, those psychologists or psychiatrists' diagrams?
The
block diagrams.
I think it looks like a heart, but you know.
I'm sure that says something about your psyche.
Yeah, it's growing. It's growing.
Right, well, should we do a bit of news?
Yes,
I've got a very fun one. So it was Glastonbury last weekend.
Yes.
There was an organised run at Glastonbury.
No way.
Which gave more FOMO than...
the music
was amazing.
What day of the weekend was it, on the Friday?
Must have been early in the weekend, surely.
Because
you're not
going to
shower,
Friday.
Are you? You're not going to shower.
There are showers.
It's pretty ropey.
You could do. It's called Ravers to Runners are the people that organised it. And it looked so good. I think they had like 400 runners take part.
That's amazing.
Wow.
Every year I watch Glastonbury, get jealous, think, I'd love to go to Glastonbury. And then I go, oh no, there's over 200,000 people there. No, I'm all right. Thanks.
Also, do you know what time you have to get a bus back? Like, this is what I
haven't looked at the logistics.
No, so I've got some friends going, and I was like, okay, obviously to get there, like, you're waking up early and stuff. But apparently the bus that they have to get on to get back leaves at like 3 a.m. or 4 a.m.
No. Well, there are loads of buses, loads of trains. I've been 6 times to Glastonbury.
Yeah, but you're type of person that would have glamped or like a hotel.
He slept off-site at a hotel. 100%. There's no way that you camped.
I had a B&B 1 year.
Did you?
Of course he did. At the very other end of the running spectrum, it was also the British Olympic trials.
Yes.
Oh, what a weekend.
You got really into it, didn't you?
I got so into it. I watched as much as I possibly could.
I don't want to take away from it, but at the same time, I've also been following the US Olympic trials, which took place over about 7 or 8 days at least, I think, with a mid-week break as well.
Nice.
And was on live TV every day. They had Snoop Dogg as one of the pundits. Randomly, he was observing at the steeplechase water jump, which was incredible.
And we had rain in Manchester.
Yeah, and it was 2 days.
And
the whole program
was
condensed into 2 days,
and
it
wasn't
on TV.
The contrast there is quite stark.
Yes,
I do think there's a lot more that can be done to elevate British athletics.
Yeah, because I was watching it from a very different standpoint to you, and we didn't really compare notes until this morning. But I've always thought that, well, I enjoy it because it appeals to the purists and those that are really knowledgeable about the athletes that are competing. But, well, if you don't know anybody,
is this the problem though? You know, assumed knowledge.
Yeah.
You know, when I was at Radio 1, the BBC, this is like where we started every single day at 8:10. You know, no assumed knowledge. When you watch the athletics, like I caught a bit of it, they use so many terms and like you don't know a lot of the athletes' backstories. I just feel, and I'm not dismissing all of them because a lot of the commentators are absolutely brilliant, but if you don't know much or you've got a base understanding, like you come into Olympic year and people watch the Olympics, most people are just watching it because it's the Olympics. They haven't watched anything for the last 4 years.
Yeah. And that is the beauty of the Olympics. There are so many different sports that you do just go like, huh.
Yeah.
Shooting or like the modern pentathlon. What does that involve? And then like suddenly you're just sucked in and watching it. Yeah. But like, I do feel I was far more invested in watching it because we've like met and been lucky enough to work with some of the athletes. Yeah. So like met Philly Bowden, met Jack Rose.
Jack Rose in 5K, yeah.
I was watching it, and then I was also watching events where I didn't know any of the athletes who were running. Yeah. And I think it's sometimes, obviously over a really short distance when you've only got 40 seconds to talk about the race in like a 200, 100, even 400, it's hard to be able to get across like sometimes 8 lanes worth of athletes. But I do feel like there's a little bit more that could be said to say like, who's the favourites? What have they done?
Yeah.
Because in the 5,000 and the 10,000, there are 10,000? Yeah.
No, there wasn't a 10K. Oh, 10K was at the night of the 10,000.
So oh, sorry, yeah. In the 2 5,000 races that I watched, there was like really nice, like they actually went through.
Because they had the time to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whereas I, like, how do we do that for 100 metres?
And how do you also, I think that this sort of impossibility, that this was essentially on the equivalent of the BBC Red Button. So it was like you could watch it on the BBC website or online, but you couldn't watch it on main TV. Mm-hmm. And I think that there won't have been that many people watching it.
No.
And those that would have been watching it are fairly hardcore fans.
Yeah.
So then how do you make it interesting to people who've got no idea what's going on without it feeling in some way, I don't know, patronizing to those that like actually do know exactly what the Olympic qualifying times are and things like that?
Well, it's like everything, it's getting the balance right, isn't it?
I think what they need to do is they need to get me and Rick on a commentary box and we'll do it for people who have no idea.
There is something in that.
Yeah, they used to do an alternative commentary for the World Cup, didn't they? With Scott Mills from Radio 1, who like didn't know anything about football. Say it like as in...
Yeah. So how good would we be at that?
If you could toggle
there's
between...
There's a pitch there.
We'd be like, Rick, who's that one? Right, this
Rick's
going
to wrap us up, but I want to touch on just some amazing performances that were interesting, and then we'll move on, which is one, Phoebe Gill. She's only 17, and she won the 800 metres ahead of Gemma Reekie, who finished fourth in the world recently. So that just to be that good, that fast, and that composed at 17 is unreal.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Then there's going to be some controversy because... The events that I watched most closely, the 800 and the 1500. So the men's 1500, we've got the last two world championships, 2022, Jake Whiteman, 2023, sorry, world champions, 2023, Josh Kerr.
Yeah.
Neither of them ran the 1500 metres at the trials. Josh Kerr ran the 800, where he fell over and didn't finish, or you know, jogged over the line in the final. But that essentially meant that one place, because they have to take him. So then the rules are first two across the line with a qualifying time get picked for the Olympics. And both of the first two, who first and second in the 1500 metre for the men, have the qualifying time. So my understanding would be they get picked.
Mm.
But Jake Whiteman didn't run and he had a medical exemption from the British Athletics to say he didn't have to run the trials. So I don't know how that works. So it might be that he's got the 800 metre time and there's a chance to pick him in the 800 metres. I know this is a bit geeky, but I love this stuff. So so basically, it's likely that only one of our most recent world champions in the 1500 metres will run the 1500 at the Olympics.
Oh, that's a bit of a shame.
There's also Jack Rowe came third or fourth? No, came third in the 5,000.
Yeah.
Has the qualifying time, but only the first two get picked. And then the third one is to be debated. Yeah. So he's got an anxious wait.
Yeah, there's going to be lots of waits for people and people doing different distances. So I just found the whole thing fascinating and I'm really excited to get out there and... you know, support in Paris.
Yeah, because we will be out there and we will be covering this. So if you want me and Rick to break down what the events are, what's going on, let us know. Email in podcast@therunningchannel.com. What is the most useful way that we could cover the Olympics to make it exciting?
We're here for you.
Probably just
I'll be there.
The answer is probably not to let me talk.
Right, should we do some questions?
Yeah.
Kate from sunny South Australia, but formerly from the Paradise Peninsula. How do we have so many Wirral listeners to this podcast?
I think it's you and I, mate.
Yeah, must be. Loving the podcast and the banter. Rick's science is questionable. I'm a GP. I think she's talking about aerobic and anaerobic, but I'll tell you one thing, Kate. I respect the fact that you're a GP, but anaerobic exercise does not burn fat. I do know that. Anyway, Kate says...
The best thing there is that I could see and hear Rick's mind working where he really didn't want to read this bit out. He was like, I'm going to keep
Rick
talking.
Science,
yeah, okay. I'm after some advice. I ran my first marathon at the end of April and it didn't quite go to plan. Wanted sub-4, ended 4:17. Still feel I've unfinished business, but current life means no time to do a training block. Any suggestions on ways to improve and maintain some of the fitness without needing to take on those super long runs? So what's the alternative?
Well, firstly, Kate has run a sub 20 past four marathon. So I think you've got to celebrate Rick's strange landmarks post.
And it's well under 5 past the hour of 5 past 5.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if she has run sub four already. She's done.
No, she hasn't. No, but as in like 5 past 5, well under that.
I see, yeah. It's well under 5 past 5. So. It's the first one. Right, yeah.
I would say I share your frustrations. London didn't quite go how I wanted it to. I'm now not building up to a marathon. I'm annoyed. But like, that's the annoying thing about a marathon is that you can't just like bash straight into another training block. My advice would be focus on speed, because if you can build, it's really hard to focus on speed in marathon training because your legs are so tired all the time because of loads of mileage. Yeah. So the more speed work that you can do now, which will be shorter stuff anyway, the more that you can then take that into the next block, and that will help.
Love that. I think, yeah, focus on something else that you can get lots of bang for your buck in terms of the small amount of time. She's saying that current life means no time to do a big training block. So things like combining hills and tempo, you get loads of benefit for that, both speed and aerobic in a relatively short workout. Mm-hmm. And then anything that you do that's quite a lot faster than your race pace will mean that when you come back to having the time to do marathon training, that marathon pace will feel easy.
The second question this week, it's not really a question, it's kind of a statement. It's Adrian from Nottingham. If you're going to continue to be disparaging to us sock shoers, you could at least get the terminology right, says Adrian. It's soccer path. Not psychopath.
Nice, good work, Adrian.
Oh my gosh, that's a merch.
Winner.
Question. Like, imagine soccer path.
Yeah.
All right, no one order it, I'll order it.
There's another t-shirt. Alice from London. Loving the podcast and the channel. I've got a question for you guys. What do you think of the steeplechase? We've mentioned this already in this podcast. How weird. It is odd that there are hurdles and water involved, and it's a fun obstacle course too. Yeah, I get it. Do we know the history behind the steeplechase, and can we get Andy to try it?
Yes, we can get Andy to try it.
Just before, well, there's a couple of questions there. That was my event at school.
The steeplechase.
Do you remember this?
No, I don't.
No, that was my event. I used to run the steeplechase. I loved the steeplechase.
I have a weird half memory.
But you're both just like, I absolutely love, I think it's a fantastic event. Because you run it and you just worry that your spike is going to get stuck in the wood and you end up balancing on top of the wood every time you jump over it.
Yeah, that's true. Or you're worried that you're going to land on the top of the barrier for the water jump in particular.
Yeah.
And not land with your spikes. Because if you land on the heel of your spike, you just slip off.
Yeah. And that was so painful. There's so much jeopardy involved.
Does it not like, because the water is like, sloping down, isn't it, so it fills up with water. Yeah. Does it not really hurt to like land with your foot not flat?
Yeah, I think people land on their toes and their spikes are quite stiff, so they can get away with
it.
And if you look at how far the best runners jump, they actually jump into the really shallowest bit.
Right.
Although there's often when you were doing it, there would have been every single like Young Athletes League meeting or, you know, lower level club meet. As the steeplechase starts, everybody gathers around the water jump. All of the parents, all of the kids, everyone that's watching, everyone's just like waiting for someone to stack it.
There's always that person as well that goes like waist deep in the water jump. But to answer your question, do we know the history behind it? Did some research.
Oh, go on.
So it traces back to horse races where you are running from one steeple to the next. Do you know what a steeple is?
Yeah, Fantastic.
Church steeple.
Church
steeple. Yes, church
steeple. Yeah, so you can see it from a long way away. Steeple.
Yeah. But then also in order to, so it, that's why they did it, so that you could see it. Yeah. But then also you were having to jump over like walls, hedges, over streams and stuff. So then when it became like modernized, the hurdle represents the walls.
Yeah.
And then the water represents the rivers.
Fantastic. There we go. And they, interestingly, I think this is an interesting bit to finish on, that they didn't have, so the steeplechase was in the Olympics from 1900. Mm-hmm. And they didn't standardize the distance for a few more years, but it was only introduced as a women's event in 2005 at the World Championships. So 105 years later.
Really?
And then 2008 was the first Olympic Games where they had it. And when
do
I was,
do you know if the barrier is the same height for men?
No,
and
it's
women?
Not. But
it's not.
But that's the interesting thing. So that it's lower for women.
Right.
But the whole track and field infrastructure around the world had fixed height steeplechase barriers at every track because it was only a men's event.
Mm.
And so in the 2000s they when the women first started doing it, they had to jump the men's barriers everywhere.
Oh,
and then,
wow.
Then they very quickly had to like roll out these different barriers around the world and certainly in the major championships and so on. But I remember friends of mine jumping men's barriers in the mid 2000s.
Wow.
Wow.
And and every school kind of track had a, you know, this steeplechase, enormous heavy log that was lifted into place and just like only got used once a year.
It is like, does stuff like that just not make you think like the
if you
just zoom out a little bit the Olympics and stuff like that, imagine if somewhere along the line they'd gone like, maybe let's not throw a big pointy stick. Why don't we throw, this disc thing? What about if we threw a shoe instead? You know what I mean? Like, we're only, at any one point, we're only this far away from it being a welly wang rather than a discus. Do you know what I mean?
Wang.
Like, small little bits that could have, changed the course of history.
I feel like you've been very dismissive about the field events.
Yeah,
there,
potentially.
No, as in, the javelin was my sport. I loved the javelin.
Sarah, before we go, talk to us about the important favour you have about the British Podcast Awards.
Right, yeah. Some people have been having some difficulty with this, and I'm going to be honest, we tried doing it before, and it's really easy. So I don't know where you're going. I don't know where you're going wrong. But
friends.
Look, all you have to do is go to British Podcast Awards, search for The Running Channel, and then we should pop up.
Listener's Choice.
And then Listener's Choice Award.
Yep.
And then you put in, you say why we're great, obviously. And then you vote.
I don't think you even have to say why we're great. I think you just
vote for us. And if you can't work it out, ask tech support.
Rick.
Not Rick. Anyone else.
Begins with the, not running.
Maybe that might help.
That could be
But use your work email, use your personal email.
Many emails as you can.
Set up brand new emails. As many emails as you can. That email that you only use for passwords, whip it out. Use it.
Oh. Super. I really enjoyed that.
Great. And we will see you next week.
This episode was brought to you by ASICS and their Gel Kayano 31 and also Sarah's misshapen and mismatched fingers.
Hey, look, that is a real life problem. What I want to talk about though is stability shoes, because for a lot of people, they might think they don't need a stability shoe or they don't actually know what one does. And I think that's what the Gel Kayano 30 really paved the way for, and the 31 is improving upon, is that actually every single person could benefit from one. So having it within your shoe rotation is really going to help when you are tired and you might need that little bit of support, which currently other shoes might not be giving you.
The ASICS traditionally have really comfortable shoes, and their idea here was to make it so that stability never felt like this with the ASICS Gel Kayano 31, which is for everyone because it gives you that stability when you need it on a run. But if you are running with good running form, perfectly neutrally, and don't need any kind of guidance or overpronation support, then it doesn't give it to you because you don't need it.
So if you are a bit unsure and want to see what a stability shoe could do for you, head to the link in the show notes to check out the ASICS Gel Kayano 31s.
So we're making Sarah run a marathon in Malaga.
Brilliant. This episode was sponsored by us, which Andy forgot to say.
Yeah.
And apparently I'm running a marathon. I mean, hey, if enough of you want me to do it, I suppose I could.
Or the half marathon. And we need to get something that gets Rick out of bed. We want you to come to Malaga with us. Half marathon or marathon. We've teamed up with Sports Stores International. It's an amazing place to go. The weather will hopefully be really nice. Certainly better than the UK weather in the middle of December. So it's a chance to come and be with the Running Channel and other runners from the Running Channel, which are all lovely people. I can promise that. that. And then we get to spend a few days together, be looked after by Sports Source International, run a marathon or a half marathon, and then party and listen to us waffle on the podcast.
I think that'll be the bit that Rick's good at. I think what we're going to struggle with is getting him to put down a glass of Gavi long enough to be able to run a half marathon. But hey, stranger things have happened. So if you want to find out more info, head to the link in the show notes or go to trc.social/Malaga.